Hey guys, welcome back to the Young Turks. Anna Kasparian and Mark Thompson with you. What's going on, Mark?
It's a big, I'm still in the celebrity shadow of the Emmys last night. We'll get to that, I know, and we'll talk about it because it's all political. But there was a lot going on in that Emmys ceremony.
I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay, so a few TYT lives for you guys that I thought were great. Rafer Madness says, if you want McCain to vote for something, just put a provision guaranteeing a new war in the bill somewhere.
Hear, hear, that's so true. He never met a war he didn't like. So true.
Christina Oak says, but I thought nobody has more respect for women than Trump. That is a statement he made, right? Of course, he never means anything he says. Also, super chat message from Karenola. You're looking, grabbing a couple billion views sharp today. Oh, that's old. Never mind. Anyway, it just talks
but
about
you
how
are
nice.
Looking, grabbing a half a billion views sharp today, Anna.
No, well, thanks. That was directed toward Cenk.
Oh.
Who, by the way, last week was really killing it with his outfits. Like,
Cenk was?
Yeah, I mean, when I say killing it.
What t-shirt was he wearing that was killing it?
That's the thing, he wasn't wearing a t-shirt.
Oh, you're right then.
Yeah. You know how I feel about the t-shirt.
Underestimated.
Yeah. All right, so we have lighter stories later on in the hour, but unfortunately we have to start with some pretty heavy reporting on protests that occurred in St. Louis. So let's get to that. The fourth day of protests began in St. Louis today over the acquittal of an ex-cop by the name of Jason Stockley. Now, Jason Stockley was a cop who shot and killed a 24-year-old by the name of Anthony Lamar Smith back in 2011. And it all occurred when there was a high-speed pursuit following suspicions that Lamar Smith was engaged in a drug deal. After there was a crash as a result of that high-speed pursuit, the cop, Stockley, was heard saying that he was going to, quote, kill this motherfucker. And then he proceeded to get out of the police car and shoot and kill Lamar Smith. Now, that cop has been acquitted. He opted for the type of trial where a judge gets to make the decision, and the judge decided that Jason Stockley wasn't necessarily guilty of what he was charged with, which was murder. Now, of course, people wanted to respond to that, and there were a number of peaceful protesters who took to the streets to do that. But unfortunately, a select few decided to get violent, and that is what is making headlines today. So let's take a quick look at the CNN report, and I'll fill in the blanks.
Someone tried to break the window here, and as you walk down, you can see another glass that was shattered here. We saw someone picking up large objects and trying to throw them into the window. Now, if you look back this direction, you can see the flower pots they turned over. And what they did was they tried to pick up these pieces and throw them into the windows as well. We've watched police officers all night trying to chase down some of the suspects. We know they made a few arrests, but right now everyone's on edge about what's going on, what they see in the streets. Now, this is after a day of peaceful protest where we saw people marching for miles and miles with no issues, but all of a sudden, late at night, once again, this is exactly what happens. A small group will start running through the city and creating issues.
It's so frustrating because it doesn't matter how peaceful the protests were during the day. It doesn't matter how much those protesters followed the law and just wanted to practice their First Amendment rights of, you know, protesting the outcome of this case. All of the attention is on the select few who decided to get violent and destroy and vandalize property after nightfall. Now, more than 80 people were arrested late Sunday as protesters attacked police. They broke windows and flipped over trash cans. Again, this is not representative of all the protesters. It is a small group of people who decided to unfortunately get violent. And again, all of the attention is focused on that. Also, according to multiple reports, including that of St. Louis Post-Dispatch photographer Dave Carson, officers chanted, "Whose streets? Our streets." After making arrests Sunday night, Carson also tweeted that among the arrestees was Post-Dispatch journalist Mike Fault. Carson claims that these were mass arrests and said that people complained that they were given no way to exit. So they were told to disperse, and it was difficult to do so. And as a result, since they couldn't disperse, they were victim to mass arrests, at least according to one of the photojournalists that was there. So it's just like the situations that happen in Berkeley when a conservative speaker shows up. You know, if you want to protest the speaker, fine, but understand that people who get violent and who cause trouble are, you lose the moral high ground,
sure.
You know? And whatever political message you're trying to spread, unfortunately gets hindered or destroyed by the select few who decide to get violent. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I applaud the activism, and you know, activism is something that I think we've lost sight of in this country. I mean, anti-war activism was in short supply before we got into Iraq. I think the kind of activism when it comes to these situations that arise all too frequently when a white cop is acquitted of violence to a black citizen who's been pulled over, and oftentimes these end up in sort of lethal confrontations. Activism is needed. But as Anna says, this activism that borders on violence and that, of course, does spill over into violence, it seems almost inevitably into violence, that only hurts the cause. You know, Ferguson, which it's weird, Ferguson happened after this incident happened, even though this judgment came down after Ferguson, if you will. So they chronologically, they're sort of reversed. But Ferguson was one of those situations where you had all these people taken to the street, and there was violence, and there was, as I recall, and this is very high profile. You'll remember all the networks were on it. And the disbursement of that crowd was something that really became the focus of the story. Now, that situation had video associated with it, I feel, which maybe got people to sort of refocus on the facts. But I think the facts here are getting lost in what you're talking about, which is the violence that spills over from the activists protesting to begin with.
Right, exactly. And every report that I've read says that during the day, the protests were largely peaceful. There were no issues whatsoever. At night, all of a sudden, a small group comes in and they cause all these problems. They vandalize, you know, storefronts. It's just so incredibly stupid. It's so stupid. And who knows who they are? Are they provocateurs? Are they people who actually believe in, you know, the political statement that's being shared during these protests? Are they just people who are looking for trouble and so they're, you know, co-opting this? I don't know. But what I do know is that it's incredibly counterproductive and incredibly frustrating, because we all know what the media is like, okay? The media latches onto the drama, the sensational stuff. They don't care about a political message. They don't care about people who want to speak truth to power. They're actively against people who speak truth to power, which is why it's so incredibly important to do anything and everything you can to not let these protests devolve into this type of violence.
Yeah, even that live shot that we saw from CNN focused on a planter that was turned over on its side. I mean, really? I mean, I can't even imagine you having sold that as a location where you were going to do your report with a straight face. Take me live from the planter that's broken. I mean, again, now, obviously there was a storefront that had been damaged, as Anna says, and again, these store owners have nothing to do with this police violence, if that's what you're concerned with. I think it is just people who are out for the mayhem of it. You know, I mean, that high that comes from just destroying shit, you know,
and dumb. It's incredibly dumb.
It undermines the entire process, but they're not really concerned with the process to begin with. Those who are, generally speaking, part of this.
Right. And, you know, this is somewhat different, but also related. Ben Shapiro was going to go speak at Berkeley. I believe he did speak at Berkeley. And the headlines prior to his speaking engagement were embarrassing. They were so embarrassing. Berkeley braces for Ben Shapiro. Berkeley shouldn't have to brace for Ben Shapiro, okay? I don't agree with Ben Shapiro on a number of things, but it doesn't matter if I agree with him or not. He should be able to go onto a college campus, a federally funded public college campus, and speak and share ideas. And instead of, you know, trying to meet speakers that you disagree with violence, and a lot of the protesters don't. They just want to protest, right? But for those who do want to use violence to protest, instead of doing that, which is incredibly counterproductive and makes you look foolish, why not share opposing views, right? Have invite a different speaker on to share his or her point of view on a similar issue that Ben Shapiro is discussing. It's supposed to be a free marketplace of ideas. Just because you don't like the idea doesn't mean that it gives you a warrant to be violent. Again, those who just want to peacefully protest, I hear you, fine. I think it's much more effective to just ignore it, instead of doing what people like Ben Shapiro and Ann Coulter want, which is the attention, right?
Right. It's counterproductive. I mean, that's a great example of where it's just counterproductive. You bring all this attention now to these speakers, and you make it sort of a hot ticket, if you want to think of it that way.
They love it. Why do you think they keep wanting to go to Berkeley to speak? You think it's an accident? You think it's a coincidence?
And they love to point to the liberals who are so free speech, who won't let them now speak openly at, as Anna says, a state-funded university, and how that they now the price of security has gone way up, and how they need personal security. It lets them pursue the narrative that they want to tell, and so it hurts it and undermines the cause across the board.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to the Emmys. A number of incidents occurred during the Emmys this past weekend that had people raising their eyebrows. Now, the one incident that I agree was questionable involved the in memoriam portion of the Emmys, where they list and commemorate all the individuals who lost their lives or passed away throughout the past year. Now, Roger Ailes was actually included in it, and people are not too happy. Okay, so for those of you who forgot about what Roger Ailes did, he had allegedly sexually harassed so many women at Fox News that 21st Century Fox, the parent company for Fox News, had to shell out $45 million in settlements for Roger Ailes. One woman said that her experience with him was psychological torture, and that he pressured her to perform oral sex on her. Ailes told one of his anchors, Gretchen Carlson, quote, "I think you and I should have had a sexual relationship a long time ago, and then you'd be good and better, and I'd be good and better." She received a $25 million settlement as a result of the sexual harassment that she allegedly dealt with. And so all these women came forward, and it led to him being ousted from Fox News. And the thought of him being commemorated or celebrated upsets people for good reason, I think.
Yeah, it was surprising to see him, and it was a weird in memoriam anyway, because if you didn't see it, and you certainly shouldn't be faulted if you didn't. I mean, it's a long, long show, but yeah, this is a part of the show where they, you have a lot of people who've made contributions to television, generally on screen, but there are also a lot of screenwriters, producers, directors who are part of it as well. And to see Ailes there was shocking. By the way, shocking also in view of the fact that people like Dick Gregory, who did tons of Tonight Show appearances, had been on television. Again, he's from that vintage. Mm-hmm. Okay, from long ago, but that's a lot, oftentimes those are people who die, the people who were on television long ago. They're now old. And to see him left out, and along with Erin Moran from Happy Days, she was left out. This is while you include Roger Ailes, this guy who resigned in shame. I mean, if this were the ESPYs, would you have Joe Paterno up there?
Oh, wow.
I mean, Joe Paterno, who knew about the abuse of kids on the Penn State campus and looked the other way for decades? No, you wouldn't. And I think Roger Ailes falls into that same category.
Yeah, that is a great point. That's so perfectly articulated. Also keep in mind that the people who were honored included individuals like Gwen Ifill, who's amazing, was amazing, incredible journalist.
And you're saying was a pioneer for women as well.
Was a pioneer for women. And so to have him included in that list, I think understandably upset some people. Especially people who were victimized by Roger Ailes. So that was a little strange. And then of course, everyone's talking about Sean Spicer coming out and kind of poking fun at himself, and the fact that he lied during a press briefing about Trump's inauguration crowd size. I didn't really care about that.
That was funny. I thought also, and I guess maybe I should or shouldn't include this in the mix, but whether in the mix that you evaluate things in. But I thought, well, he's making fun of this fact being clearly bankrupt of any truth.
Right.
And so from that standpoint, I kind of give him a pass. The other argument, and again, I'm kind of torn, is yeah, but he was clearly daily pushing these mistruths and lies and fictions. And to that extent, for him to be even celebrated for a moment at the Emmys, that, I get it, that could be galling. I guess for some reason, the moment kind of played as theater to me, and mm-hmm. for some reason it didn't bother. If you brought, what's her name out? I just can't believe I spoke.
Kellyanne Conway.
Thank you. Oh my God. She is, I mean, that would, let's assume she left the Trump White House and then she was included in an Emmy bit. I'd find it loathsome beyond Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer was almost a joke. Mm-hmm. She is, I think, such a pernicious influence on this society and media. She's a propagandist and a horror. And she helped get this guy elected. That also puts her in a different category. So that wouldn't pass the sniff test. He's closer for me.
He's closer. Yeah, I guess I don't care that much. But the arguments that I've heard against having him be part of the Emmys is that it rehabilitates his career path.
Fair enough.
And I hear you, because right now he's having a hard time finding work. People are just kind of saying no, like PR firms and things like that. And look, that's what publicists do, though. That's what press secretaries do. They do damage control. They go out there and they try to kind of change messaging or change the perception of something that a public figure has done or said. And so I'm not making excuses for Sean Spicer, but that is what he signed up for.
Right.
And
look, there are some who would say that those who served under Obama or Bush, they should, you know, they should suffer that same ostracized fate that Sean Spicer, we want to consign him to.
The whole point of a press secretary is to lie to you. Like, yeah. let's keep it real. Sean Spicer, it's much more jarring given the fact that we have a man-child sitting in the Oval Office right now. But, or maybe not even sitting in the Oval Office because he's never there. But nonetheless,
like sitting upstairs watching TV. But yeah
same, exactly.
We get it. Yeah.
It's more jarring with Trump, but in past administrations, it's the same thing. The press secretary is there for damage control, to change the perception of what the president has done or is doing, has said. And so that's not surprising. It's just that Sean Spicer's lies were just so incredibly obvious. Like the thing about the crowd sizes at the inauguration. And he was asked about that today, actually. And he was asked whether or not he regrets that press briefing. And he said, I do. Well, yeah. I would regret it too. That was laughable. Anyway, all right, we got to take a break. Let's do that. When we come back, we will discuss Kellyanne Conway and what she thought about the Emmys. And then later on in the hour, Dolly Parton's in the news because of her appearance. Why are Trump supporters furious with her? I'll give you that and more. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. So a few of you have shared a video with me on Twitter showing a cop in St. Louis allegedly breaking a window and then trying to frame protesters. So I'm gonna look into that. I just wanna let you know I hear you and I see it, and I'm gonna look into it and update you guys as soon as I can confirm the accuracy of that video. We wanna make sure that nothing is
Yeah, so there's no. You want to make sure it's legit video.
And yeah, then we exactly. Can talk about it. I just saw it and it looks convincing. I just want to let you guys know that I'm on it, and we will update you as soon as I can confirm it. Also, a few TYT lives for you. What really shocked me the most about the Emmys is that anyone still watches or gives a fuck about the Emmys. That's according to Annie. Squiddies says the only thing Spicer regrets is that he couldn't come up with a better lie on the spot. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure he has plenty of regrets that, he has.
Yeah, if you could have an off the record conversation with Sean Spicer, it's not like he's not a moron, although he, I understand, conducted himself in a moronic way along the way as press secretary. But I'm sure he'd tell you, oh, my God, it was it's a dumpster fire and I got to go out there every day and it's fucking awful. I mean, I'm sure he would say it almost just like that.
Yeah. Also, there's a bunch of tweets coming in from people who think violence is, by the way, I don't know if these are real people or if they're just trolls or, you know, if they're just individuals trying to plant provocateurs to make liberals look a certain way. But anyone who condones violence in a political protest is ridiculous. And if you don't like that, if you think violence is the best way to prove your point or to get your point across, you're obviously wrong. It obviously hasn't helped your cause at all. And anyone who's against me saying that we should allow people to come onto college campuses and give their speeches, how do you disagree? Just because you disagree with someone doesn't mean that you get to decide for the entire campus who gets to come and speak, right? I'm sure there are some people who are interested in hearing opposing views on their campus. You don't get to dictate who does and does not get the ability to appear.
One of the things I think that's
so dumb
that we worry about on these college campuses, and I worry about this as coming from a progressive standpoint, is that the agenda is increasingly driven by Koch brothers money.
That's right.
Academia is becoming infiltrated with this one opinion. I welcome a plurality of opinions on college campuses. That's one of the things that you go to college for. And so, you know, you can go to college freshman year as a born again Christian, and you can graduate as a senior as an atheist, and vice versa. I mean, you know, you can be exposed to all these different things. So I'm not so worried about my philosophy of life or politics or anything else being threatened that I don't want a plurality of opinion on these college campuses.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I listen to Ben Shapiro's show, his podcast.
Sure.
And that's not because I'm a Ben Shapiro fan. I listen because I want to know what the perspective is on the other side. I think that makes you a well-rounded individual to hear the ideas coming from the other side, to analyze them, to think about them. Who knows? You might actually hear something that makes you think, oh, that's kind of a good point. Let me investigate that. And that has happened on several occasions. And then I'll investigate it and I'll realize, oh, okay, well, there's some misleading stuff there. But I want to be able to know what the arguments are on the other side, right?
Yeah.
And so if you just want to live in a bubble where it's an echo chamber of either liberal ideas or conservative ideas, I think it's going to further divide the country, and we just don't want to listen to each other at all. And a college campus is not the environment where that is supposed to take place. You are supposed to have differences of opinion, different ideas, and if that hurts your feelings, then you shouldn't be on a college campus. Give that seat up to someone who actually wants to learn or to think critically about these issues.
And certain college campuses are more open than others to a plurality of opinion, and that's one of the things you go to Berkeley for, is a plurality of opinion. I mean, you know there you're going to get, I understand, left-leaning, at least from a reputation standpoint, generally, but also sort of open. And part of being on the left, frankly, is that, you know, we're more accepting of listening to these other opinions.
We're supposed to be.
That's the idea. That's one of the things about the Democrats, you could say, and I understand the Democratic Party has got all kinds of issues. I don't want to get too long a discussion, but I'll just round this point off by saying one of the things we do on the left is we kind of eat our own. You know, we can't agree on a lot of things, and we decide, hey, I'm not going to support that person because I don't like their position on X. And what they do on the right, as you know, is they all fall into line. They know, for example, in the case of Donald Trump, they know, a lot of them do, what his deal is, but they want to get a Supreme Court appointment and all the rest. My point is simply that on those college campuses that lean left, the plurality of opinion would be something that should be something that is welcomed. And,
right.
Anyway, it's a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Moving on.
Let's move on. Conservatives are furious with Dolly Parton over her appearance at the Emmys. She actually took the stage with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. And of course, their speech got a little political. Now, they were in a movie together, 9 to 5, and that's the reason why they were on stage together to present the award for Best Supporting Actor in a miniseries. And the country star didn't say anything about Trump, but Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin did. So let me tell you what the statements were. So Jane Fonda said the following, graphic 20. In that movie, referring to 9 to 5, we refuse to be controlled by a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot. Then Lily Tomlin said, and in 2017, we still refuse to be controlled by a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot. Now, Dolly Parton didn't say anything about that. She didn't say anything about Trump, but just the mere fact that she was there, sandwiched between these liberal women, really upset and hurt the feelings of Trump supporters. So let me give you a few examples. One commenter on Dolly Parton's Facebook page said that he or she was saddened that you would stand with these idiots and bash our POTUS. Another person said, you just threw so many of your fans under the bus. And another commenter said, you stood up there while those two ran their mouths. You are just as bad. She didn't say anything about Trump. She just stood there as, you know, these actresses made their comments. And like, who's the snowflake now? Like, really, who's the snowflake? Like, really, no one's allowed to criticize Trump. No one's allowed to be in the same room as individuals who criticize Trump. Because if they are in that same room, guilt by association.
Yeah, that I couldn't agree more. I mean, come on, man. And look, first of all, they're from a movie which is all about fighting against this chauvinist boss. Okay, that's part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Their boss is this a-hole chauvinist, and he takes chauvinism to these movie extremes. So the joke is on point that way. And you've got a guy, like him or don't, the president of the United States is clearly a chauvinist as well. Frankly, he falls kind of into the same category as the character from their movie. So it's sort of a clean joke. You may not like it. You may not think the politics belongs in the Emmys. But this just in, politics has always been in these award shows. I have no issue with it. I mean, I think, and the idea that Dolly Parton, who, yeah, she just happened to be, she knew what was going down. She knew what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. But that she should be tarred in the same way is odd to me. As Anna says, it kind of reflects how thin-skinned GOP supporters can be. I mean, it's
they can't handle anyone criticizing Trump. Like, think about that for a second. It hurts their feelings too much to the point where they will take time out of their day to write nasty comments towards someone who just happened to be in the presence of other people criticizing Trump. Like, if that's not Snowflake 101, I don't know what is. By the way, speaking of snowflakes, Kellyanne Conway didn't like how politicized the Emmys were. Here she is talking about just that.
Your takeaway yesterday from the 3-hour celebrity, I don't know, political rally?
It did feel that way. I guess it's sort of the same, it's the sameness. They got plucked and polished and waxed, and some of them didn't eat for 2 months, and all for what? To sound the same? And they have a right to speak, but if you're tuning in to watch, if you're American, you're tuning in to watch your favorite actors and actresses and shows, and I used to do it routinely as a kid, who's going to win? And oh, she lost, and I love her show more. There is very little of that. It's between the Emmys, the Miss America pageant was very politicized, our sports are very politicized, and it looks like the ratings are suffering. It looks like America is responding by tuning out, because they want you to stick to your knitting. They want you to, I guess in this case, read the stuff other people write for you.
She couldn't be more, there's several things going on here. Mm-hmm. First, let me address the ratings, because I also saw Frank Luntz posted something about how the ratings are way down, and when will liberals understand that they're going to alienate half the country with all the politics and the Emmys. The ratings were down on the Emmys, and by the way, when we say down, they were the same as last year. Just in the target demo, they were down like 10%, I think, because a football game was on that was a marquee football game, and football ranks at the top of television viewing. Every week, it ranks at the top of television viewing. If you look at the top 5 shows, they're all football. So put a marquee football game in prime time up against the Emmys, that's going to siphon off a bunch of audience. Number two, again, on the same point, politics is actually driving the success of Stephen Colbert in late night. Mm-hmm. Before Trump came in, Colbert was languishing. Now he's winning. So I don't buy the idea that no one's watching and the numbers are down and Hollywood, when are they going to get it? Bullshit. Mm-hmm. People are concerned about everybody's become a political activist. People who had never voted before all of a sudden leaning forward in their chairs to find out what was going to happen. So I hate this idea that, hey, when are the liberals going to learn politics has no view, no place at these award shows. And then last thing, and I'll shut up. I also object to the idea that actors can't have opinions on politics. Why not? You have to be a pundit on Fox News. You have to be a former appliance salesman who looks good and then can speak halfway decently. You get a weekend show and then you get a mainstream show on Fox News. Fuck that. These are some of them very well informed people on a number of different subjects. And if this is their forum and this is their opportunity, I don't mind hearing what they have to say.
Right, exactly. And it's their right to say what they want to say. And look, they love talking about the ratings, and it's hilarious because I would love to hear Kellyanne Conway talk about Trump's ratings. And I'm specifically talking about his approval ratings because they are not good. Rasmussen, which leans a little more conservative, has the highest approval rating for Trump at 44%. But if you look at Gallup, it's 38%. I'm talking about today. That's what his rating is today. And that is not looking good for him. He came into office with incredibly low approval ratings. And so, I mean, look, there are people, as you mentioned, who were never inclined to be political, getting involved and feeling, you know, inspired to, you know, make a change. And you're seeing it in social media. People on my Facebook feed that had never been political before are now getting involved because they see that right now is a very fragile and vulnerable time in America. And so if you have people in Hollywood or celebrities who want to make a statement or make a stand, awesome. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. In fact, even if there were a couple of people who wanted to say something supportive of Trump, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, why don't you just stick to acting because I don't like what you have to say. No, they get the right to say what they want to say. And if this is their platform, then so be it.
I think, and I default to the first thing Anna said, which is so well put, Snowflake 101. Hey, yeah. It was two jokes. Get over it already.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to non-Emmy news because there is a lot of it. New reports indicate that a location scout for the Netflix series Narcos was tragically murdered while he was in Mexico. Now he was scouting specifically for the fourth season of Narcos, and his bullet-riddled body was found in an area of Mexico that's known for cartel violence. Now this is Carlos Munoz Portal, and his bullet-riddled body and his car were found in a remote area in central Mexico, close to the border of Hidalgo, which has one of the highest murder rates in Mexico, partly due to cartel violence. Now season four of Narcos is said to be exploring the origins of Mexico's famous Juarez cartel, just as season three focused on the rise and fall of Colombia's Cali cartel. Now, it's unclear whether or not the producers of Narcos plan on continuing with the Mexico-focused season four plans, but this is an incredibly tragic story, and my heart goes out to him and his family.
Yeah, and it's so weird how the power of the cartels extends to this. Well, first of all, Mexico, as you know, and these formerly beautiful tourist areas, like I'm thinking of Acapulco, which mm-hmm. they say is sort of the Riviera of Latin America or whatever. It has a reputation of being a place where, like, you know, people go for a honeymoon. You can't even go there now. Oftentimes, I'm reading about more and more violence in the streets, and so. More to the point here, the idea that the cartels could be so attuned to the media they're getting to the point that they'd want to murder this guy. I mean, this is a location manager. He's not, some high-end producer who was the creator of the show. He's really sort of a foot soldier, and it does send a message. It's a frightening message, and it's a frightening scenario that's being played out in this country. And it's, by the way, reflective of, as I say, what's going on throughout Mexico in relation to the cartels.
Right, exactly. And, you know, so right now, unfortunately, there aren't any witnesses. The authorities have very few leads in order to carry out justice for him. But what's amazing to me is that they went to a crime-ridden part of Mexico in order to consider filming there. Don't do that. There's some suspicion that cartels might have targeted him because they saw him with a camera, and so they might have thought, okay, he might be trying to find information on us. He might try to report us to authorities.
Oh, so that they don't. So it's suspected, or at least theorized, that he might not. They might not have known that he was attached to this production.
Right, right. I mean, how would they know? I would be surprised if they knew. But you know, it's such a devastating story, and it's if anything, it should make people realize that when individuals are fleeing parts of Mexico, they're not doing it to come to the United States to cause trouble. In a lot of cases, they're doing it for, of course, economic reasons, but also to escape violence. And right now, you know, undocumented immigrants coming in from Mexico is at an all-time low. But people trying to come in from places like El Salvador and Honduras, that's up because of crime that's partly fueled by our war on drugs. We have empowered these cartels to the point where they have become more powerful than authorities in those countries. And there are innocent people that are trying to flee the violence. They're looking for safety. They want to save their kids from murder. And that's the reason why they're trying to, you know, go to other countries in an undocumented fashion.
Yeah, what Anna's talking about is so true. The stream of refugees from violence. I mean, this is rape and murder going on in Central America, and they're passing through Mexico on the way here, and they come on top of these trains. If you haven't gone online, you can see it. It's heartbreaking. These kids who are huddled on top of the train as it goes. Hundreds of miles, you know. So, what's driving immigration again from Central America is not economic opportunity even so much anymore, because there's less and less of that in this country, as you know. But it's the fear of death. It's the fear of murder.
Right, and it's interesting because Mexico never felt that it needed to secure its southern border, and now all of a sudden they're noticing this influx of. You know, refugees essentially from Central America pouring into their country. And so they all of a sudden are dealing with a similar, not a similar issue, but, you know, immigration policy questions that the US has had to face. And so it's all pretty interesting stuff. And again, my heart goes out to this poor guy's family. And it's okay to shoot the show in New Mexico or Arizona or a place that kind of maybe you can make.
Sure,
here to look like Mexico.
My friend just wrapped a show all about Iraq, and they shot it in New Mexico. New Mexico doubles for Mexico all the time. This is one of those things where you feel like, well, if they're on Entertainment Tonight or one of those shows, they're going to go, yeah, let me tell you, we went down and actually shot it in Mexico. And man, I'll tell you, that place is no party, but we wanted to have an authentic feel. Bullshit. Don't risk people's lives. Move the production to New Mexico and hire a bunch of authentic people. That's what Hollywood is. It's casting.
Right, exactly. All right, one final story for you guys. It just blew my mind. It's not getting much play in the US, but I thought maybe our audience would be interested in it. Iceland's government is allegedly currently facing a collapse over an issue involving distrust. Now, the prime minister of Iceland failed to disclose the fact that his father signed a letter of recommendation that allowed a convicted pedophile to receive restored honor. Now, Iceland's justice system is very different from the United States. This convicted pedophile would essentially have his record expunged if he could receive three letters of recommendation, which claim that his character is actually great. And the prime minister's father actually signed one of those letters. And now people are upset because this convicted pedophile is actually pretty terrible. And the fact that the prime minister's father helped him get his record expunged concerns people. Now the party blamed Benediktsson, he is the prime minister of Iceland, for failing to inform the government that his father wrote a letter recommending a pardon for this convicted pedophile. His name is Hauksson, and he was convicted back in 2004 of raping his stepdaughter almost daily for 12 years, starting when she was only 5 years old. Now, Hauksson's victim described the pardon as surreal and said he continues to harass her in text messages and phone calls. Now, how did this lead to the government collapsing? Well, according to reports, the centrist Bright Future Party dropped out of the three-party conservative coalition, eliminating its one-seat parliamentary majority. Benediktsson called for a snap election on Friday as protesters gathered near the parliament building in the city's posh downtown area. Now, the election is scheduled for October 28th. The story is insane.
Yeah, well, there's so much going on there. I mean, first of all, in any kind of universe where a pedophile has record expunged or even given any kind of pass, I mean, it's just, it's horrifying. I mean, it's the one area I think that has become a place where people can skate who should be burning in hell. You know, they've skated in the church, they've skated in athletics. I mean, this happens all around, and in many communities. Now's not the time, but many communities that we look up to and revere, they're often cloistered communities. There's a lot of bad stuff going on in there, but because they're cloistered and they seem quaint from the outside, we give them a pass. Anyway, this is horrifying. But my point is simply in mentioning those other examples that I just feel as though this is, for some reason, maybe it's because it's kids who don't have a voice that, for whatever reason, resonates with people the same way these powerful men, in this case, a very powerful man does. Maybe that's why it's so wrong that it makes your skin crawl.
Yeah, it's beyond wrong. And, you know, we're critical of the justice system here in the U.S. because it's so overly punitive and doesn't focus on, you know, rehabilitating people so they can go back into society and be productive members of society. But the fact that in other countries, you can have your record expunged if you're a convicted pedophile, if you've raped someone for years, every single day, you can have your record expunged just based on letters of recommendation. By the way, this convicted pedophile served 6 years in prison. I don't think that's enough if he is now able to harass his victim. And that's what his victim is alleging, that he is now harassing her and this pardon has, you know, destroyed her peace of mind. And no one should have to deal with that.
No, and it's really all about the victim. I mean, once the guy gets out, it should all be about the victim. So there should be, you know, in this country, we'd have a restraining order, right? So that person can't communicate with the victim in any way. That person can't go near the victim physically in any way. I mean, this would all be sort of baked into the release. And that person would have to be checking in with the parole officer or whomever regularly. Instead, it's just the opposite. As Anna says, this guy's, you know, lighting her up, just harassing her because he's pissed off that he had to serve 6 years after he raped her again. And this is stuff that he has pled to. This is stuff that he's admitted to.
Yeah, he raped her for 12 years, starting it from when she was 5 years old. It's just crazy. Another thing I just wanted to quickly make a comment on is how there was swift action. You know, as soon as this information was put out there and it was reported, people protested, they took to the streets. Members of his party, stepped down because, you know, because of the distrust that this led to.
And that's one of the reasons the coalition disintegrated.
The coalition, exactly. So that's the reason why, you know, the government in Iceland is kind of, I don't want to say it's in shambles. I mean, it's being reported as collapsing. But there will be an election on October 28th in response to what just occurred. And it's just fascinating stuff. It's just so different from, you know, what we experience and hear about here in the United States. And I wish there was better reporting about it in the U.S. because it's, I think it matters. You know, we're all tied together in some way, and to know what's going on in Iceland, I think is important and relevant.
Yeah, no, and we have a history here of again, particularly under the umbrella of religion, letting a lot of people get away with a lot of stuff, and this is not so different.
Yep. All right, guys, we are almost out of time, but I want to give Mark an opportunity to share some info about his podcast.
Oh, thank you. Got a new episode up. It's called The Edge with Mark Thompson. Please put The Edge with Mark Thompson because there are a jillion other podcasts called The Edge. It was a bad name, but that's the one I've got. So The Edge with Mark Thompson. You'll find some political views at the beginning of things with Michael Shore, who you know. But this week, great producer, writer, comedy. So it's a kind of lighter, fun conversation. Please check it out. Thank you, Anna, for mentioning it.
All right. Thank you for watching, guys. If you're a member, there will be a post-game show. So stick around for that or catch it later. And for everyone else, we love you. Have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow.